You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
DNVR Draft Podcast, Friday with Jay and Jay, my guys, Jake, Justin. They're covering teams that win football games every once in a while. That's breaking news right there. And a real revelation for this podcast, we, as always, are presented by the good folks at DraftKings Sportsbook, the number one book in all the land. Use that code DNVR for some amazing offers right now, especially for new users. Also on DraftKings Sportsbook, the odds for Hendon Hooker to be the number one pick drastically increasing as we speak. That's always a nice, you know, I like to have a number on this stuff. Before DraftKings, we didn't really have a I'm a numbers guy. I need something based in data, and to some extent, a line is data. All of a sudden, the fifth shortest odds to go first overall. Justin, how are you doing, man?
As a sports fan, I've certainly been better. I mean, it's been rough, obviously, in Broncos country, and we'll talk about that today.
Yeah.
The Nuggets, not exactly, you know, a great opener. The Avs lost in overtime. CSU lost a winnable game. Bama lost a winnable game. I mean, it's been a rough week, but it's also been a lot of fun games. I mean, as much as it sucked as a Bama guy, I mean, that game was just one of the better regular season college football games ever watched. And Utah USC was right up there as well. So a lot of fun stuff to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. It feels like both in college football and the NFL, the parity is way up. And that has been really nice. Also, Jake, I've started fading our picks on this show. So I'm like giddy. I can't wait for the second segment because I'm making a killing by Ryan and I are calling it betting uncomfortably. The greatest example, 2 weeks ago, we loved fading UCLA. It was so easy. And then UCLA, they beat Utah outright, right?
They kicked their ass.
Yeah. It's been a great year in college football, man. It's been a great year. And Jake, you might have all the disappointments that Justin mentioned, minus Bama, subtract Bama, add Michigan. My guy, not too bad, huh?
I mean, it's not bad right now. The Buffs even won a game last week. I mean, I don't know what's going on. It's been awesome, though. It's been a great change of pace to cover a win. I'll tell you that.
That was dope, man. And to see the 50-plus thousands, you know, fans rewarded, I'm not going to be a hater. I saw some people, you know, taking shots over the field storm because it's against Cal. Dan won a game in like a year. Let them storm. If 50,000 people show up, they deserve to have some fun. And that's what's been cool about, as bad as both of these teams have been. I mean, CSU had like 35,000. It was a near sellout for, you know, a one-win team. The fans are committed out here, so they deserve a better product. And I do think better days are coming, so that's exciting.
100%, man. I mean, it was people, as you said, people were going to just get all upset about it and everything, but these fans know what they've been through. So
we're pro having fun on this podcast.
Absolutely.
Once you 100%. Get it back, then you have some standards. But like right now, it's just all about embracing the moment.
Yeah. Also, we can't always be like, oh man, they're taking away from what's making college football great. And then we're also like, how dare they storm the field?
at least they're there. That, like, Tennessee, how many people bitch about the attendance?
Yeah, that was insane.
And
absolutely,
there was an ugly scene there with, I think it was Jermaine Burton. It's like he smacked somebody. Hopefully that's not true. Emotions are running high. I mean, that's the anti-field storm people. That's what they'll say, is it puts the players in a bad position. And it does. It just asks for something to happen. But it's such an organic moment. They hadn't won in 15 years. The shot that CBS had of the fireworks going off after they win, and then immediately the field storming. I mean, it was like a movie. You know, it was really poetic. As gut-wrenching as it was for me, as far as the outcome goes, I was just like, God, that was everything we love about college football. So you can't even be upset about it.
I saw a tweet or something. I don't even know if this is a stat, but Bama, every time they've been beaten, they've had the field rush on them since like 2010 or something like that. Is that true?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's like Ole Miss and A&M, and you know,
that is brutal, dude.
Yeah, it sucks. It really sucks. Every time they lose, you have to sit there and be like, but that's, you know, they've earned the price of winning. Like, you earn that when you have success. So you gotta roll with the punches if you're a Bama fan, and accept the fact that if they are storming on you every time, I mean, that's the ultimate sign of respect, right?
It is.
Well, the crazy thing, and Jake and I talked about it on last week's pod, right at the end, was this Tennessee win really makes it possible for three SEC teams in the playoffs. Like, everyone wants to talk about Bama out. I don't know if you guys have been watching college football for the last 15 years. Bama always makes it in with one loss. One loss literally means nothing.
Tennessee's still got to go to Georgia. So, I mean,
right. If they lose to Georgia and then it's an undefeated dogs team against a one loss Bama in the SEC title, and Tennessee's sitting at home with one loss, right? And then Bama wins the SEC. You have 3-1 losses, and it's almost a shoo-in.
Well, and the one thing that could throw a wrink. Oh, go ahead, Jake. Sorry.
So we can't put this energy out there. We can't do this, man.
Well, here, let me bring a counter then, because while it is still alive, the thing that kind of makes this year unique, and I think I heard this brought up by Scott Van Pelt, shout out SVP, but the difference between this year and some of those other years, though, is that you have actual contenders in both the Pac-12 and Big 12. With, you know, you still have an undefeated UCLA. We'll see what their resume shapes up like. TCU, I mean, if they run the table, they're going to have multiple ranked wins. Like, the Big 12 is actually good this
year. Big 12 is amazing. Yes. So, I mean, you could totally have an undefeated Ohio State and a one-loss Michigan, or vice versa, you know?
Yeah, but that's why we do need the expanded playoff, I guess. I mean, in years past, I don't know, but this is like a perfect case for how fun would an 8 or a 12 team playoff be this year.
You on Saban's mailing list? Is this straight from the newsletter this week? So obviously a gajillion topics to get into in the world of football, both pro and amateur, as we used to call it.
For now.
For now. I mean, I actually think that ship sailed over a year ago.
Yeah, you're right.
we're just making jokes. And yet, the sicko that I am, I wanted to start this off by talking about how I feel and how we're all supposed to feel when we look at a mock draft these days, where even though right now, like, if you just look at the regular standings, they're like the 10th worst record. There are plenty of...
Tinkathon has him at the 7th overall pick. Ouch. Right now is what it would be.
Ouch. So, like, the latest Draft Network mock, which must have come out before Monday Night Football, has them at 14, where Seattle takes Tyree Wilson, the edge out of Texas Tech. So that doesn't hurt much, right? Like, okay, we can get over that. Draft Countdown has them 5th, drafting Will Levis. So okay, ouch, that kind of hurts, but it's Will Levis, so I think I can handle that. Charles McDonald on YouTube has them 7th, drafting Kelee Ringo, which, whatever. I mean, shit, we could use him, but I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. So I guess right now and both Draft Countdown and Yahoo had a consensus top four at least, which was CJ Stroud to the Panthers at one, Will Anderson to the Raiders at two, which, oh man, that'd be terrifying. Bryce Young to the Lions at three. God, that'd be an amazing fit. Or just an amazing get for Detroit. Jalen Carter, the stud out of Georgia, at four to the Texans. And, you know, the Texans also through the Browns getting a pick at six and taking Will Levis, which I'm not quite sure about. But anyways, I guess what I'm trying to get to is when this Russ trade was first made, we knew it'd be a top 10 pick in a weak draft. And then we kind of assumed it'd be a pick in the late teens to 20s. This year, if it is a top 10 pick, how do you guys see this draft? And is there kind of an inflection point where it's like, man, if they were to miss out on a Jalen Carter, a Miles Murphy, Bryce Young, this is a disastrous trade, but the next tier is fine.
I feel like the extension is more damning than the trade at this point, just because while if it is a top 10 pick, it's going to sting. Two first round picks, like that's just kind of what you have to pay when you're assuming it's going to be what we thought was going to be, you know, at least a competent starting quarterback. And I'm not saying that Russ still can't be. I think there's a lot of issues with this offense and lack of creativity from a scheme standpoint. That was one thing. We'll talk about it later with those fun college football games. It's so much different watching like Lincoln Riley create for these guys inside the 20, and then you go watch what the Broncos are doing, and is this the same game even? But I mean, it's gonna sting. I mean, if it's the top 10 pick, I don't see how you feel good about the trade unless Russ just drastically plays better. But right now, the extension, I think, is just what kills you and looks absolutely awful because you committed all this capital and now you can't invest in the future because you don't have a first round pick to. It's just a tough spot. Tough spot. We might have really blew this one.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. The extension's been giving me nightmares already since like week four or five, honestly. So I try not to think about that one too much. But yeah, I mean, just looking at this offensive line, they could use probably another tackle for sure. They could probably use another corner. Maybe even a wide receiver too. I mean, there's just so much going on right now, and they're not going to have this what looks like a top 10 pick now. It stings pretty greatly, I would say. I don't even know who I would miss out on the most if it was taken, if they were taken with our spot right now. But I mean, Eli Ricks at Alabama, there's corners too. I mean, there's options.
There would have options. Yeah, I mean, it's the lack of general depth. I do think, you know, the needs you just mentioned, in an ideal world, they're playing well with Russ and you're able to sign those kind of guys. Who are in that range of trying to make a final run and want to come to your team and are willing to take less.
Or you hit on like a Charles Cross like Seattle did later.
Yeah. Though I mean that was that ninth pick they got from the restaurant. You know, I think so, and just generally, I mean, we're seeing what just adding good first rounders or good top 100 picks. I mean, Baron Browning has been otherworldly. And that edge is another area where you lose Chubb. You know, you'll replace him with Browning. Having some insurance with Randy Gregory's injury stuff would be really nice. And I mean, they've been depleted by injuries as well. So, I mean, that doesn't help the depth at all either. I think as long as Bryce Young isn't available at the pick you're at, and they got to figure a lot of stuff out. I mean, for just on-field reasons, if they do end up with a top 10 pick, it's disastrous just simply because they didn't improve even a bit from years prior with Russ. And there's like a ton that needs to be figured out with that offense just in general. But I think as long as it's not Bryce Young, you can essentially live with this. And And the more I think about it, the more I come back to what I was saying 3-4 episodes ago, which is that I'm very intrigued by the 2024 class. I really can hope that DJ Ugalele stays in school, continues this sneaky, nice progression we're seeing, because that size really has me intrigued. And, you know, it's a class of DJ, JJ McCarty, Caleb Williams, Sam Ewers. And okay, this stuff keeps on happening. Injuries keep stacking up. Russ, you know, gets banged up. Then you have another bite at the apple for a class that maybe there's outside of, you know, the top dog, which I don't really think is plausible regardless. That's the other thing, is like, you need a top three pick no matter what. And I'm not sure, even if Brett Rippon was the quarterback, that they'd be bad enough to have a top three pick. That's kind of where they found themselves these last few years. I think you might just have as good a chance if it really, you completely blew this Russ trade, to do it all again and have a chance of drafting a guy a year from next year's draft. And you know, it will, the depth issues will be felt for years and years and years. But that's similar to how the depth issues have been felt when the Broncos completely blew draft classes in the post Manning era as well. And that's just built into the game. So I don't know. I guess that's kind of where I'm landing on it. But at the same time, if this does end up being a top 10 pick, there are much greater issues. And this is going to be a rough offseason.
Yeah. If Bryce Young is taken with the Broncos pick to Seattle,
That'd be devastating.
I don't know if I'd be able to live with myself. Yeah.
That's the one that cannot happen. That's the one that just cannot be allowed.
I still think he's going to go top three. So yes.
He has to.
I don't feel super bad about it right now. But I don't know, man. You lose to the Jets. You're in a bad spot going into a wonky London game, and this schedule only gets harder. So, it's hard to feel good. You know, I don't want to be too doom and gloom, but it's just.
Yeah,
when this was supposed to be such a fun season, it's just been such a kick to the crotch. And you know, like watching Vaughn kill it for Buffalo, it just feels like every decision we made was a coin flip, and you can understand the rationale between what they did, but it just came out wrong. Like, it's like you get it. I don't know if it was necessarily a bad choice, but it just has not played out.
I mean, wins and losses color everything. And football is a game of the slimmest margins. They should have won both those last two games in prime time, if you ask me.
They should have beat Seattle. They should have three more wins than they do right now. And that's when you come back to poor coaching. You'll hear that on every podcast. So
right. And when you're on that razor's edge, you could be 5-1 just as you could be 1-5. And you're actually
like the Vikings. The Vikings are sitting here at 5-1 and they have won every scrappy, crappy game,
right?
Whereas the Broncos have found ways to lose them.
Yeah, look at the Vikings record against the spread. It's opposite of what their real life record is. That's how bad they've been. But they're pulling off the close ones. So it's just a game of margins, man. And I think it's easy to feel like everything sucks when those margins just... I mean, you keep giving them up left and right instead of taking advantage of them. So to me, that signifies a quick turnaround, but it's also full of parity. And this isn't a team that inspires much confidence in any way. I mean, if we want to go further on the Broncos, I still can't get over the fact that it's been at least 4 play callers, several head coaches, a multitude of starting quarterbacks, and this team has yet to figure out how to pick up some extra pressure. There's no line adjustments. There's no pre-snap adjustments. The center's not doing shit about this. And the center might be the one consistent part of all this. And maybe it really is time to move on from Lloyd Cushenberry, who I was, through the moon about that pick. center for one of the greatest offenses in college football history, a guy who was loved there at LSU, graduates early despite all the load he had with that historic season, which is why he goes to the Senior Bowl. Insane length and athleticism for the center position. It just hasn't worked out. He straight up sucks. And I mean, even having a veteran quarterback, they can't pick up a fucking blitz. It's the most basic offensive football. And on top of that, they can't get open against man coverage. So when you can't achieve the most basic of, at the NFL level, these aren't even basics. It's like me not being able to talk in this business. It's like the most low entry. And right now, anyone can scheme against that Broncos offense. I mean, shit, you just bring extra pressure, you play man coverage, boom, it's done. I don't even care who you have on your fucking defense. You can do it in the blink of an eye. So none of this really matters until you get the most like minuscule details that any pro football team should be able to achieve figured out. So, you know, it just comes down to all that. But yeah, to me, I can live through anything that's not Will Anderson, CJ Stroud, and Bryce Young. And I think Bryce Young is the only one that scares me, where the NFL talks themselves into, he's small, the shoulder this year, you didn't win back-to-back natties. You know, we start doing the stupid shit. Oh, his wide receivers, blah, blah, blah. And you know, like there's plenty of analysts that have Will Levis QB2, you know, which to me is
insane
madness. Because through all of Hendon Hooker's game, and maybe we can close off segment one with this, we should not lose the fact that Bryce Young comes back from injury and is an absolute stone cold killer. I love this kid so much, man.
He's incredible.
I've got a ton to say about him, so let's do the ads and then let's get into that Alabama Tennessee game.
Okay,
we'll go on and on.
Let's do it. That's not a bad plan here. Justin mentioned it with some Nugs disappointment, but the NBA is back, baby. It's actually Sports Equinox right now, where you have all the big dogs in action. You actually have MLS playoffs too, obviously college football. Soon in November, Football Month in America comes around, where there's actually football Monday through Sunday all week. God bless the Mac and all the good they do for this world. But right now on DraftKings Sportsbook, with the NBA being back, they are, of course, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can make any $5 NBA money line bet and get $200 in free bets if your team wins. That's in addition to all the amazing stepped up same game parlays they offer. Every week, it's like more offers than I can even keep together on the football side. It's been insane. You can do the SGPX, as they call it, SGPP, where you can do multiple same game parlay together. That's going to be a fun way to pass the weekend. So just download that DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use that promo code DMVR, make any $5 bet this week and get $200 in free bets if your team wins, only at DraftKings Sportsbook with promo code DNVR. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
Basketball is back, but so is football. And you know Breck Brew has you covered with the hometown craft beer, the Denver Broncos, Broncos Country Pale Ale. Show off that colorful Colorado legacy with the Orange Crush logo. So fly, I've got it on a jacket, a shirt, and a hat. That's how much I love it.
It's true.
Made by 100% Colorado ingredients, this will be your go-to all football season long. You can get them at the tailgates. We're out there crushing them before the games. It's a great time. You should come through if you're going to any games this year. But check out the beer locator at www.breckbrew.com to find a Broncos Country Pale Ale near you. You will not be disappointed. Boom.
There you go. We teased it, so give me your thoughts on this Hendon Hooker, Bryce Young, Big 12 style SEC game which, by the way, we would not be praising like this if this was just like Texas Tech TCU from 3 years ago. We'd be like, defense in the Big 12. which, Jesus, what has happened to defense in the SEC?
I've got takes.
Yeah, please. But I guess before I give the word to you, Hendon Hooker, obviously incredible, though I think when you watch the tape with a little more of a fine-tuned comb, still plenty of... He missed that one, plays. Jalin Hyatt might be the real story. He was just like gobbled up Bama's secondary, which Saban, man, must just be having nightmares over that. And Darnell Wright, not enough people talking about how the right tackle for Tennessee after playing very well against BJ Ojulari and LSU really maybe had the best performance against Will Anderson that we've seen in 20 plus games the last 2 years. So incredible offensive performance from them. And I already mentioned Bryce Young, but Justin, what did you see in all this? What are your takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, Hooker is one of the most fun players in college football. And at this point, I would say he should be the Heisman front runner just because he's had the moments, the numbers are undeniable. As you mentioned, the accuracy is definitely a concern, especially in tight windows in the intermediate game. That deep ball is legit.
Yep.
It's absolutely legit.
Yep.
But Hyatt's running, he's just torched the secondary all day. Those weren't hard throws. Like, he was five yards past the DB every single time.
Yes.
It was insane. I mean, that was as individually dominant of a performance by a wide receiver that I can remember in college football. He just, took over. And to Hooker's credit, he hit those deep balls. Again, they're not the toughest, but you still got to hit them. But Bryce Young, man, just the composure that he showed in this game.
It's wild.
To be able, I mean, they go down 28-10 after that muff punt. He takes them straight down the field. They get a touchdown. Tennessee weirdly goes for it on fourth down after that, turns it over on downs. They get another field goal. I mean, that 10-point swing there in the last 5 minutes of the half, most teams going down 18 in that environment, they're getting curb stomped. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, Alabama, they should have won. They beat themselves with penalties and just lack of discipline. It's been a problem all year. Yeah. Some of those pass interference calls were not great, but that's how it goes in a game like this. I'm not going to like come up here and be like, boo-hoo, the refs cost them the game. Stop Hyatt at one point in the entire fucking game and you win. But it was just... It was a lot of fun to watch, man. I don't know how you can watch Bryce Young and not just be in love with him. Like, I get he's small, but his poise, his escapability, he showed it a couple times. Had one where he like scrambles all the way right to the sideline, sidesteps the defender, delivers a dart for a first down.
Dude,
they were in his face all day. He's still making touch throws in the intermediate game. That's the big difference between him and Hooker, is just Bryce can make any throw on the field, but it was just a lot of fun, man. Like, I could go on and on. I know I'm ranting here, so I want Jake to talk about it. But to me, this game was really validating for both of these teams. Like, you're for real.
Yeah.
I mean, Bryce Young is just a killer, man. That play you're talking about, Justin, where he's running right and he just puts his leg, dead leg in the ground. The guy goes flying by and he's standing there. There's no pressure all of a sudden. And just delivers a dart. I mean, the composure, the confidence that he has is otherworldly at times. And he was just carving up Tennessee. To that point, though, I cannot believe Alabama lost this football game. They should have won this football game five times over. But that being said, this may come back to bite me. I don't think this Alabama team has it this year, though, in terms of CFP contending. The secondary just is not up to par. They're grabbing a lot. They're getting DPIs called at the goal line and stuff. I mean, it's very non-Saban-like stuff. But on that note, Jahmyr Gibbs, so impressive. My goodness, man. He is... Go ahead, Justin. Tell me about him.
When we previewed the season, you and we did our running back class, I said he's running back one. And if you want, Bijan Robinson... It's a stud. We're going to talk about some other stud backs here. You know, Blake Corum and Brown, the kid from Illinois. But he is Jahmyr Gibbs has the quickest feet in college football. His vision, his lateral agility.
Yeah.
He lets the play develop, then he just hits it. He had a touchdown run in the third that was magical. Dude, they're trying to run off tackle, but he reads it, cuts inside, explodes through the hole, does a little hesitation without even like skipping stride, goes in untouched from 26 yards out. He just, he's going to be the next Alvin Kamara.
Yeah, he's so good. And then Jalin Hyatt too. Some Randy Moss shit from him. 6 receptions, 207 yards with 5 touchdowns. Are you serious, dude?
Oh, he's amazing incredible. Game, though. He's incredible. He was unreal in that game. That, there's nothing else I can say. Unreal. I mean, the, you know, we can remember there's like a short list of quarterbacks who've done this to Bama. Wide receivers who've done this to Bama, the list is even shorter. I mean, just yikes. Absolutely.
They couldn't even stay in the ballpark with him.
No.
Like it.
No.
Every single time that Hooker dropped back and you could tell they were going for a shot play, I'd just look down because it's like, oh my God, here we go again. They could not stop it. I mean, it was like a video game. It was insane.
No,
that's what has me concerned the most about this Alabama team, though, man. You don't see this often from them. How do you expect them to hang it with DJ and Clemson, with Ohio State? Shit, Stetson's been throwing darts and has been able to make some plays downfield. I mean, these defensive backs are just getting ran by. It's nothing like I've ever seen from Saban defensive backs.
I will say, credit to the Tennessee, you know, pass pro, like we already mentioned. There aren't going to be very many games where Anderson just gets completely taken out of the equation. Yes. And that's something to factor in moving forward.
Yeah.
Bama did get a couple of really key stops on fourth down to stay alive in this game. And it kind of, I don't know, you know, kind of reminds me of like those Bills Chiefs games where it feels like they're getting torched, but there's moments of key quality defense where the talent pops. And Tennessee's kind of the same deal. Like they couldn't really stop Alabama. But their pass rush was getting home all game. And it's like, there were moments where they did it, but the secondary is definitely a huge concern for Alabama because it's just all of these offenses are going to be able to move the ball on you and you still got to play Ole Miss. I mean, right. Auburn can move the ball at times as dysfunctional as they've been. It's concerning.
I feel like it's what we've said about Ohio State the last few years too. Like Bama, Ohio State, secondaries and O-lines especially just aren't at all what we're used to. That and I mean, last year, Ohio State was the D-line, too, that you could just run on, like, easy peasy.
That final drive from Tennessee, that has to keep Saban up. They just 2 plays, and they're already in field goal range like that. How often does
run
that
happen? Run the ball, Saban. Throw 3 straight times, and you leave them 40 seconds. You run the ball. And worst case, you go to overtime if you miss that kick field goal. But with how bad your secondary has been, and to his credit, he even admitted it, that like it was a bad play calling sequence. And, you know, I feel like Alabama's not in these type of games that often. And there have been a couple of instances over the years where Saban's really dropped the ball. I mean, it's the same deal with the Iron Bowl, you know, the kick 6, where it's just like, what are you doing? Play for overtime. Yeah, just... that was bad coaching, you know. We rarely are going to say that about, you know, Saban. So it's just a tough way to lose, but the path to the playoff is still alive. It's going to be a really interesting final 6 weeks in college football.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Hooker, where do you guys rank him? Is he a first rounder? He is 24.
I don't think so, man. I mean, maybe
he's not consistently accurate enough in those intermediate windows. Like, that's if you can't make those throws, you can't be an NFL quarterback.
I look at Jalen Hurts. I mean, kind of end of second round, day 2 guy. I think that's where you have Hendon Hooker, just with the age and everything factored in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the age has been a lot of those older guys have not worked out.
When you just, you have shorter time to figure it out, you know, it's like we always come back to, it's like if you're on the fence between a 24-year-old and a 20-year-old, you're going to take the 20-year-old. It's the same thing in basketball. It's the same thing in baseball. It's all right. Well, we got time to figure it out with one of these guys, one of these other guys. If it doesn't, 2-3 years, he's going to be, you know, the face of a auto dealership somewhere. So it's just, it is what it is. He's a tremendous athlete. One of the most fun players in college football, not trying to be a hater, but the people that are trying to elevate him over some of these other quarterbacks based on some of these plays. Again, like these receivers are running completely unfazed. Like, I don't know. I think we're getting a little carried away.
I mean, when someone's in the Heisman race, you do get carried away. It's weird how he's very Desmond Ridder-y in the intermediate game, but he has the deep stuff that Desmond Ridder could only have dreamed of. So he's really intriguing on the deep ball. It's the rest of the game that, but he's going through his progressions. I mean, he's solid. He's got poise for days too.
And he makes great decisions with the ball. Like, I mean, the touchdown interception ratio, like, I could see a team falling in love with him and taking a flyer on him late, but I think the age is ultimately what is going to keep him out of the first round. Cause I just, if he was 21 with nothing else different, and maybe that's stupid, but it is what it is. Like, that's just, we know how this process works.
Feels like a draft where we're going to like a lot of the day two, day three picks.
Agreed.
Guys like Cam Ward, Hooker, you know, some of the dudes you like, Jake, Dorian Thompson, Robinson, they're going to drop just a little and we'll be like, oh man, that's a sneaky pick. Oh, I like that pick. Any other standouts you guys want to go over? That was definitely one of those huge games of this college football season. So I'm glad we gave it its time. Quentin Johnston goes off. Chase Brown and this magical Illini team gets a big win. Blake Corum has another big one and a huge win for Michigan. Miles Murphy went off against Florida State. Levis pulls off a big upset against Mississippi State, though I don't know if the stats are all that impressive. Dalton Kincaid is big and a huge upset for Utah over Utah. USC. Anyone you guys want to highlight? We've got plenty of Week 8 stuff to get into, too. So no pressure either way.
Those backs you mentioned, you know, Brown and Corum, those, they're just throwback type backs, you know, like good vision, sturdy, physical. They're a lot of fun to watch. Chase Brown is deceptively really effective in the passing game. Just wanted to throw that out there. Soft hands. Dalton Kincaid, I'm glad you brought him up because he was the star of the show for that Utah offense, as well as Cam Rising. And the one thing I just want to shout out with Rising, and I understand he's flawed, but I'm really high on him as like a, you know, day two pick guy you can just bring in the building. I think he makes good decisions. On that 2-point conversion for the win, he did what he did not do in the Florida game. He read it. He's under pressure. Instead of forcing a ball into the end zone, he uses his big ass frame and he just runs in untouched in there. I don't know, man. I think this Utah team is poised. I know they just got waxed by UCLA the week before, but I still think Utah's the best team in the Pac-12. I really do.
All of these guys have been impressive. I will say Chase Brown has been nice, but man, Mo Ibrahim in that game, he is so impressive. He's another guy who's really, like, I think he's 24 years old also, and he's got a lot of wear on the tires. But if you're a team like Denver who needs a back, especially these next year or two with Javonte kind of healing, I think he's someone that should be considered because I think he's plug and play in the NFL. Johnston at TCU is an absolute freak. I can't believe the explosion and stop and start ability he has at his size.
At his size.
And then he's got that skinny post where Duggan throws the ball between the safety and the corner, and Johnston just jumps in the air, and the safety's coming over. If it's any guy smaller than Quentin Johnston, that safety absolutely levels that receiver, and there's no catch or even a play on the ball. But Johnston goes up. He delivers the hit as he's jumping up when the safety's coming to make contact and still makes the catch. Kincaid was just special. My take on Will Levis was watching that game, I kind of got it, was starting to buy in. And then he pulled a Cam Ward and threw a pick six on a screen pass. And from that moment, I'm going to set a rule with that for myself, guys. If you throw an interception, a pick six on a screen pass, I can't trust you, because I don't care if it's the play called. I don't care if that's the only route that you have to throw to. You have to see that these corners know what's coming. You can't throw that football, do anything, take the sack, throw it 8 yards out of bounds. You cannot take that interception there.
Any local shout outs? I'll just say Mo Kamara, edge from CSU, continues to impress at 4 QB hits in that Utah State game. His get off is really impressive. He uses his hands well and he just smokes quarterbacks. CSU secondary, deceptively really nice. Jack Howell, 61 total tackles, 3 picks right now. Aiden Hector, the Washington State transfer, has slid over at nickel. he's a guy that has a lot of versatility. You could kind of play him, you know, all over. And Henry Blackburn, a local kid, is playing well, really rangy, physical. I'm not saying these guys are going to be like first round picks or anything like that, but I do think there's some NFL talent on that CSU defense, you know, worth watching as we see how this year goes out for these local teams.
On the Buff side, I'd point out Guy Thomas and Terrence Lang, both kind of play defensive end and on the edge. This defense has been, I mean, a lot has been said about them. They haven't played well those first five games. They played really nice last week. I think those guys will offer the NFL some value, though. Guy Thomas in particular, I don't think he's really shown what he's capable yet.
I'll just circle back to Johnston. You know, the wide receivers that work out in the NFL, it's some pretty freaky physical traits that really help him strive above the rest, and he has that, man. It's not just a size-speed combo. It's stuff like Jake's talking about, the kind of physicality at the point catch, the compete level. That's really, really impressive. He just feels like a guy who might go late first, and in a few years, we're like, dang, that dude just ended up in a great situation. He's an absolute beast now in the NFL. Let's get into week eight, man. It's the nitty-gritty, late October. You start to see the Halloween decorations. All these regular season games really mean a lot. It kind of becomes upset city. And we'll start with Ohio State hosting Iowa minus 30. Quietly, the Buckeyes really rounded into form here. I don't know what the uncomfortable side is here, guys. What sticks out to you?
30's big, but... Mm-hmm. Iowa, I saw a stat, they haven't covered like seven straight games in October against ranked teams. They have not covered the spread. So this is typically when Iowa's deficiencies come to life because they get to the hard part of their schedule. They can't keep up with the offenses that they're going against. Obviously, defensively, they're nice, but I don't know. I mean, they would have to play the game of their lives to keep this Ohio State team close. I like the over 49.5. Most Ohio State games are pushing near the 60s, but I guess maybe the uncomfortable play would be taking the under and counting on the Iowa defense to at least keep it somewhat respectable. 30 is a little bit large for me. It makes me somewhat hesitant, but I think they cover it late, so I would take it.
I think I like Ohio State minus 30 and the over. I'm looking at that. I think I might parlay that. I like those odds. And I think that Ohio State could potentially get this over by themselves.
Interesting. Interesting. I like this thinking. The big change for Ohio State is that D-line feels like an Ohio State D-line again, and that is not a recipe for success for Iowa. Also interested to see kind of that front seven talent for the Hawkeyes and how they can strife. Big one for Paris Johnson, for example. Syracuse at Clemson. Syracuse has been an incredible story. Dino Babers really turning things around. Kind of a great example of how sometimes a little patience for your head coach can go a long way. They're undefeated, ranked 14th. They go to Clemson. Clemson, 14-point favorites in this one.
Taking the Tigers.
Go yeah. Tigers.
I don't believe in this Syracuse team, unfortunately. I mean, a win over NC State last week. I think Leary got kicked out of that game, though, right? Or he got brought out because of injury. And then just looking at this Syracuse schedule, I mean, big wins over Wagner. You beat Virginia by 2 points, Purdue by 3 points. You put it on UConn and Louisville. That doesn't sell me enough for a home game with Clemson and DJ. DJ, let's talk about him real quick, man. He was slinging it. Beautiful balls, leading his guys down the sideline. That the flea flicker touchdown, do you know what I'm talking about? With the tight end just right up the sideline, how he fit that ball right over the shoulder in stride. Beautiful.
Slowly but surely. Yeah, watch out for DJ.
I don't know, man. 10 a.m. kickoff, though. It's kind of like this sneaky time for a team like Syracuse to hang around. You just have a Clemson team that's maybe looking past them. The fact that they're undefeated and ranked top 15, I think Clemson going to try and earn some style points here. But
yeah,
I don't know. Cuse is a fun story. I have a hard time seeing them keep it close with this Clemson team and what we've seen from the offense the past couple weeks.
Oh man. Okay.
Somebody's gonna fade us and make a bunch of money. So I'm
that's been me the last couple weeks. I don't know. So right now you're telling me Iowa and Clemson Syracuse to cover, essentially? No, you're both on Clemson.
No, Ohio State and Clemson.
I know. So if I fade it, I'm taking Iowa and Syracuse. Ugh.
Syracuse.
God, that's a real sickos parlay right
it
there.
It makes me uncomfortable. I mean, this is what I'm learning is if it makes you uncomfortable, it's the right play. Talk about making you uncomfortable. Oregon at home, 6-point favorites to UCLA. If you're laying 6 on Bo Nix, there's nothing more uncomfortable, man. I'd literally rather be in a car that my 4-year-old is driving than lay 6 on Bo Nix against UCLA. This is insane.
Which defense can stop the opposing team's running game? Both of these defenses come in averaging, allowing less than 100 rushing yards per game, while both opposing offenses are averaging 200 plus yards on the ground. Whoever can stop the running game and make the other team, you know, while I do like DTR, I think he's somewhat flawed as a passer at times. We all know the Bo Nix experience. I mean, if you can force one of these teams to be one-sided, I think you're going to be able to win. But so far, nobody has stopped either of these teams' running games, and they've played some impressive defenses. So I think this is a fun matchup. And man, Chip, it feels like old school Oregon with some of this play call stuff he's doing with DTR. They're going into Oregon. I like UCLA in this game straight up.
Yep. Give me the money line plus 195 on UCLA. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. UCLA just feels like such the better side. And the book's it's giving you
cheesy.
6 on Oregon. Oregon, like, empty the account on the Ducks. And I hate it. My football brain hates it. My betting brain is like, wow, you got to be
home
all over
Knicks.
Home Bo Nix. I mean, look, Oregon's wins. They wax BYU by 21. Late comeback win against Wazoo. That one was insane. Horrible beat. This is where the betting uncomfortably thing started. solid 18-point win against Stanford. And they take care of business against Arizona on the road last week. It's not a bad team. I don't believe in them at all, but they're getting it done. It's a really fun Big 12 slate. Let's go to Texas, Oklahoma State, Sark against Gundy. This is a good one. And I guess I love Texas as 6.5-point favorites on the road, which is kind of wild.
I think I'm on the Pokes, man.
Yeah, I think I'm on the Cowboys as well. That defense is legit.
They are 2 years in a row. They're really good. They might not have a true stud who's going to win awards or like go high in the draft, but they are so solid, man.
They're well coached and they stick to their system. They get after the quarterback. They typically aren't getting blown in coverage. I don't know if Oklahoma State offensively can keep up with this Texas team. So I kind of feel like both sides are uncomfortable. If you're backing Oklahoma State, that's a crappy spot to be in because we've seen what this Texas offense looks like with Ewers and, you know, Robinson rolling.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, Oklahoma State's going to be a great atmosphere. They absolutely live for this shit to take down Oklahoma, Texas night game. I mean, this is classic Oklahoma State win. But I also don't trust Gundy sometimes. Like, we've seen him blow these where Oklahoma State should have been in it.
They were the original Clemsoning. Like, 20 years ago, it was Oklahoma State was the, you know, Brandon Whedon. That team was undefeated.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up. Week. There were some crazy games in there.
What a disaster. Yeah, I mean, everything lines up for Texas. Texas does. Now, Oklahoma State is starting to feel like the uncomfortable side to me. You just made the case.
But Spencer Saunders last week against TCU was really impressive for me. I thought he's been playing really well. He's on pace to set career highs in yardage and touchdown interception ratio. Already 13 touchdowns this year. The most he had was 20 last year. He's also added 8 on the ground already. I think with that crowd, that atmosphere, and just coming off that loss against TCU last week, I really like Oklahoma State in this spot.
And I mean, betting on Sounders is not dissimilar to the Bo Nix experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. That guy is.
He's cost them pretty big in a couple of key spots over the years, but
dicey.
He's playing good football. I mean, their defense is solid. I like the atmosphere. It's more a principle thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Mississippi State, the Pirate, going to Alabama. Tied 21-point favorites. Feels like a great week to bounce back, but Sippy State gets upset by Will Levis's Kentucky team, so they're coming off a loss as well, and Bama just isn't covering these massive spreads. So you're a resident Bama expert, Justin. How do you see this? Guide me here. Is the over hot at 61?
Yeah, I definitely take the over just with both these offenses and more the fact that what we've seen out of either of these secondaries, they haven't exactly been impressive.
Right.
You're going up against the air raid. Will Rogers is making the best decisions that he's made so far. They're spreading the football around, 8 different guys with 10 or more catches. Caleb Ducking, their 6'5 receiver, worries me. I don't feel comfortable at all with Bama covering it, which is why I think you should. I think that's the uncomfortable play. I do think they have a lot to prove. I think Mississippi State is solid. I think they're an 8-win team, maybe even a 9-win team. If Bama is an actual contender, they've got to come out and they've got to roll this team. So we'll see.
I think the uncomfortable side for me is Mississippi State plus 21. I mean, they only scored 17 last week against Kentucky. They needed that pick six too from Will Levis. They don't have that pick six. They only scored 10 points. Mm. I think that is the uncomfortable side. But that being said, if gun to my head, I think I would pick Alabama minus 21. So make of that what you will, Drew.
Yeah, I'll say every week there is a couple games where it's like the obvious side was just too obvious. And I just think the book isn't going to adjust on Bama. And they're going to keep laying these big numbers because it's Bama and you don't want to make... They're like such a publicly betted team. You don't want to make this easy on anyone. And I think Mississippi State, that offense, you get the ball out quick. You neutralize Will Anderson a little bit that way. And yeah, it's maybe a bit of a shootout, though. Would it surprise me if Bama rolls them coming off a loss? Not at all. This might be an over pick and then stay the heck away the rest of the way.
Yeah. I won't be touching the spread. I can tell you that with my own money. I will not be touching the spread.
And then, Justin, it's our spicy Big 12 picks head to head here. You love Kansas State. I thought TCU was frisky. And some way, somehow, here we are. They're both great. And it's TCU at home as 3.5-point favorites. I'm not quite sure what to make of this either way, which means I go to the backfield I trust more and I trust Kansas State's backfield infinitely more.
Nobody's been able to stop this rushing attack all year. I mean, they have done everything to maximize Adrian Martinez's strengths and play away from what he doesn't do well. It's very similar with what we've seen with Todd Senteo going from CSU to James Madison. It's just, we're going to lean on what he does well. We're not going to try and get too cute here. We're going to use our athleticism, and that Kansas State defense is physical, man. They keep them in it. I like the Wildcats. They've been my team all year. I'm not going to back away from them now. TCU is awesome. Their receivers really worry me, but I'm going to stick with my team. Go K-State. I'm going to take K-State straight up and to cover.
I like TCU. Garrett Riley is absolutely legit. He calls plays just like his brother, and the Buffs need to gather all of their best resources and their best pitchmen and try and get this guy to Boulder, because I think he's going to be legit when it's all said and done and he's a head coach one day. That being said, I do like TCU in this matchup. I just wonder if coming off that big win, I mean, they've had a hell of a stretch.
Oh, it's been guys. Insane.
They've played Oklahoma, beat them by about 30 points. They played Kansas in that weird shootout game, won by 7. And then last week, a 3-point win over Oklahoma State. They do have this game at home again. I think that makes me feel a little bit better, but the number makes me lean towards Kansas State as much as I like this one Frogs team.
Yeah, it's I think I just trust Kansas State a bit more. You running through that slate, all I'm thinking about is how great Quentin Johnston was, or how important he was in so many of those games. Mm-hmm. He might be a top 10 prospect for me in this year's draft.
Yeah.
He's having that kind of year, man. Just a huge impact. Oh man, I don't think there's a ton of obvious sides in this slate. So that makes it exciting. I will bet uncomfortably and take Oregon. That's the one side that I am very confident in, because I'm very confident in UCLA in reality. So I just fade my thoughts and everything goes well.
Where are you at on these local games before we go? Buffs 23.5 point dogs at Oregon State. Coming off the big win, Oregon State been kind of a tough stretch. I kind of like the Buffs to cover.
Yeah, Buffs to cover does feel right, just because, I mean, even though the Beavers are 5-2, they're not that kind of blow it out team. But I mean, that last game against Wazoo was impressive, man, and does kind of feel like a get right game. But no, I think if we're using the bet uncomfortably standard, the Buffs are the uncomfortable side, which makes me uncomfortable. But it also makes me feel like they might just pull this off. I can't believe the Rams are 6-point faves. I cannot believe this.
Second best scoring defense in the conference. Like, their defense really is playing lights out right now. You should get Clay Millen back, which
that's
is big.
Huge.
I mean,
that's
they just,
huge.
They have established a rushing game finally. Avery Morrow looks awesome. They figured out some of their offensive line woes. It's not perfect, but they're in a state where they can at least be competitive. They were just so limited in their playbook these past 2 weeks. I mean, I was talking to Matt Mummy about it, and he's like, there were looks where if we had Millen out there, we would have checked into something else, but we couldn't do it with our freshman QBs out there, and we just kind of had to roll with it. It's uncomfortable. The Rams have only covered once all year. I like them to cover at home this week.
This, to me, feels like an Hawaii cover and a close win by the Rams. Maybe
could definitely be
hold tight and bet them live on the money line might be my advice on this Rams game.
Yeah, that's fair. Hawaii's got a good rushing attack. Mm-hmm. Their defense has been really bad, so it's you know, hopefully a chance for CSU to score some points.
I can't believe they kept it as low scoring as they did against San Diego State on the road.
San Diego State cannot throw the football.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Air Force can't either, you know, but they seem to score points.
With this number at +6, though, and this over-under set so low, I feel like I have to take Hawaii +6, even though Colorado State might win this football game.
There we go. That's why I wanted to get you guys' perspective. We get a couple of different, you know,
the Buffs are covering,
here, let the people decide.
The Buffs are covering. This is a massive number. They're playing much better defensively. Bengal Branson, the quarterback at Oregon State, very young player, has only played 5 career games. He's thrown a lot of interceptions in those time. Not a lot, but he hasn't been great throwing the football. So they're really going to need to run all over Colorado, which, I mean, one of the worst run defenses in the country when you look at it. But if you look at last week and the transformation that Gerald Chapman's done to this defense, I'm buying in.
Yeah,
I don't know. The more we talk this through, I think I like Oregon State to cover, coming off of the emotional win. Who's going to be a quarterback for CU?
It's JT Schrout. Owen's hurt.
Oh boy, we'll be tuning in for some wild ones locally. I don't know what side to lean on. Now you've really got me twisted up like a pretzel here. I don't know. Yeah, maybe Oregon State overlooks them a little bit and they cover this, they backdoor it, they keep it within like 21. I could see that. All right. We're the Draft Pod. We thank you all for listening. Have a great weekend betting on these games. Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for doing this, and we'll be back next week. Bye.
first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.